We may no longer have to guess the number of jelly beans in a jar in order to cast a ballot. But even as we sit here, there are those in power who are doing their darndest to discourage people from voting by closing polling locations and targeting minorities and students with restrictive ID laws and attacking our voting rights with surgical precision, even undermining the Postal Service in the run-up to an election that's going to be dependent on mail-in ballots so people don't get sick.
In a powerful and moving eulogy for Congressman John Lewis, former President Barack Obama provided perhaps his most pointed attack against President Donald Trump and the Republican Party as they actively work to suppress the vote of millions of Americans. We talk about this and more in this week's episode. America the voiceless. Nikki Rojas.
And I'm Maria Elena Perez. We're the hosts of America the Voiceless.
We believe all Americans have a voice, but too many Americans face roadblocks when it comes to casting their vote. America the Voiceless looks into the barriers many Americans have to overcome to make sure their voices are heard during the voting process.
This week, Republicans from around the country were supposed to formally announce their support for President Donald Trump's re-election bid at the Republican National Convention. It was originally supposed to be held in North Carolina, but was later split into two events, including a higher-profile portion in good old Florida. However, a new surge of COVID-19 infections put a stop to that at the end of July, forcing Trump to announce that the party would have to reimagine how the convention would go on. Regardless of the convention, the GOP has remained steadfast of its support of the president.
Trump has had 4 years to make America great again, but instead he and Republicans have used those 4 years to wreak havoc on this country. From purging voter rolls to targeted disinformation campaigns to various voter suppression tactics, Republicans have used every weapon in their arsenal to suppress voters who traditionally don't vote for them at the ballot box.
In this second episode, we'll hear again from Ense Ufot, the CEO of the New Georgia Project, and Thomas Patterson, Harvard Kennedy School professor and the author of Is the Republican Party Destroying Itself? As we discuss the GOP's long history of voter suppression and its latest attempts to maintain power by stifling voters' rights in local, state, and national elections.
So I definitely can point to legislators, elected officials, party leaders who see this issue, who are taking it seriously, and who are doing what they can to make sure that people are allowed to vote. But I want to be clear that it is, for the most part, Republicans, particularly in the state of Georgia, but elsewhere, that are racing to make it more difficult for people of color to vote and participate in our elections.
There's no better example of Republicans' insistence of suppressing the vote than their refusal to reauthorize the Voting Rights Act. Activists in the civil rights movement poured their blood, sweat, and tears into making sure the Voting Rights Act passed in 1965. But in 2013, the Supreme Court gutted key aspects of the law and allowed states, mostly in the South, to change their election laws without prior federal approval.
In July, we mourn the loss of an icon of the civil rights movement, Congressman John Lewis, who was brutally beaten in Selma, Alabama, as he fought for voting rights in 1965. Democrats called for Congress to honor his memory by restoring voting rights, but Republicans refused to do it.
In fact, Republicans have refused to do it for quite some time. Lewis presided over a historic vote in December 2019 to fully restore the Voting Rights Act. But Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican, has blocked that legislation from ever getting the chance of a vote on the Senate floor.
And what's even more disgusting, and despite actual visible evidence of it, McConnell had the audacity to say in an interview with the Wall Street Journal that there's little tangible evidence of this voter suppression nonsense.
Today, voters in Georgia were met with long lines and confusion at polling places as they tried to cast ballots in the state's primary elections. There are already calls for an investigation, while the mayor of Atlanta is warning that this could be a preview of the general election in November.
Thomas explained just how little Republicans have done to expand the electorate over the past several decades, while Democrats have done the exact opposite.
Nearly every effort to kind of expand the electorate has come from Democrats. An example of that is the Voting Rights Act of 1965, the Motor Voter Act of 1993. These were both attempts to expand the electorate, to make it easier for people to register and vote. If you look at the Republican record over the last 60 or 70 years, there's not a single example that's comparable to either of those.
So would you say that, I mean, this is a very blunt question. So would you say that the Republican Party isn't really getting anything right when it comes to expanding voting rights at all?
Well, I think at the moment, what the Republican Party has done is sort of to double down on its turnout strategy. If you look at the Republican coalition, it's 90% non-Hispanic white. So it doesn't draw very much from the groups in America that are growing in size. And those groups are the minority groups. And every one of those is increasing in number. The white population is diminishing. And if you're a party that's as heavily dependent as the GOP is on a particular block, and it's shrinking in number, while those who vote primarily for the other party increasing in number, you have one of two strategies. One, you can begin to reach out to the people who are not voting for you. The other thing is you can try to make it hard for those people to vote at all. And that's been the Republican strategy.
Now, not only is voter suppression a tactic used by Republicans at the national level, but we're seeing it being used very clearly on the state level. We're seeing blatant examples of voter suppression in a number of states, including Georgia, Kentucky, and Wisconsin, just to name a few.
How do you think voter suppression is currently at play in Georgia?
I think that voter suppression is perhaps the key tactic that our current crop of leaders are employing to extend their tenure in leadership and to prevent progress from happening. It is by design, it is aggressive, it is intentional, and it must be stopped. We are looking at, you know, Georgia becoming the first state in the deep South with a white minority, where people of color will make up the majority of Georgians in about 4 or 5 years tops. And people of color will make up the majority of Georgia voters soon after that. And we aren't the only ones with access to that information. You know, conservative Republicans also have access to it. Our governor and secretary of state also has access to it. And instead of embracing the changes that we are living through, they are doing everything in their power to stop it, including voter suppression, purging people from voter rolls, etc.
Maria, when we spoke to Democrats in our last episode, they were really supportive of mail-in voting. They reasoned that it would increase voter turnout, particularly during this pandemic. But Republicans seem hell-bent on pushing the idea that mail-in voting will equate to massive voter fraud.
I mean, honestly, it's not surprising that they're against mail-in voting, and it has absolutely nothing to do with voter fraud. Trump, McConnell, and the rest of the GOP are determined to shut down anything that could increase voter turnout, because a higher turnout almost always means trouble for Republicans.
It feels like Republicans aren't even trying to be subtle about their intentions anymore. In July, the post office suddenly announced that it would pilot a new program that would take its already delayed first-class mail and delay it even more by not allowing carriers to sort and box newly arrived mail in the morning and deliver it, and instead wait until after their daily routes.
But wouldn't that mean trouble for voters who are sending in their ballots to be counted?
Exactly.
Donald Trump has signaled that he would like to make it hard for people to have access to the ballot in November. He's come out very strongly against mail voting, claiming that it's riddled with fraud. Well, we have a state, Oregon, that's been doing all mail-in voting for some time, and they have virtually no fraud in their system. It's a system that can be run as safely as any other form of voting, as long as you have the proper checks. But I think Donald Trump is very much fearful of mail voting because it would increase the Democratic vote, and he's been fighting it. And in the Republican states, there's been no inclination to extend mail voting in any significant way.
Now, don't be fooled, y'all. The GOP isn't just trying to shut down mail-in voting. No. It's trying to keep voters away from the polls in any way possible. Thomas explained to us just how they go about doing that.
Well, I think the clearest example of that is the effort to keep voters away from the polls. And they're pretty precisely targeted. So if you look, for example, at voter ID laws, and particularly the more strict version of that, which requires you to have a government-issued ID. Most people have that in the form of a passport or, more commonly, a driver's license. But who doesn't have one of those forms of ID? Well, they tend to be Democratic voters. Among Black Americans, 25% don't have a government-issued ID. Among Hispanics, it's about 17-18%. This is pretty carefully targeted to try to make it difficult for certain groups to go to the polls. I think a more egregious example even was in North Dakota, where the Republican-controlled legislature passed a law that to register to vote, you had to have a street address and a number on that street address. Well, who did that target? Well, nearly everybody has a street address, but there are some who don't. And in North Dakota, that happens to be Native Americans living on tribal lands. Many of the tribal lands don't have named and numbered roads, and they vote about 3-1 Democratic. So it was clearly targeted at a Democratic vote. I'm sure if they had been voting 3-1 Republican, the Republican legislature of North Dakota wouldn't have passed such a law.
Native Americans were being impacted differently in this election with our tribal IDs that have to be changed now to have physical addresses. And that's something that all the tribes in North Dakota haven't had to do before.
The GOP has continued to use a targeted disinformation campaign and various voter suppression tactics to keep control of not only the White House, but of state and local governments around the country. But the last 6 months have turned the election season on its head.
That's quite the understatement. In January, we began to hear whisperings of a new virus coming from China that soon spread to Europe. The novel coronavirus quickly took hold and spread like wildfire across the world. Of course, with our oh-so-brilliant commander-in-chief, the virus wreaked havoc in our country, killing more than 175,000 Americans and counting. The virus did something else. It destroyed Trump's precarious polling numbers and his already weak support among the American people.
But things got worse for Republicans, didn't it? In May, four Minneapolis police officers brutally killed George Floyd, reigniting the Black Lives Matter protests. Floyd's death came on the heels of the horrific murder of Breonna Taylor, an inspiring EMT in Louisville who was sleeping at home when Louisville Metro police officers stormed her apartment on a no-knock warrant and shot her 8 times, killing her. And the death of Ahmaud Arbery, who was merely out for a Sunday afternoon jog in Georgia, when two men took it upon themselves to hunt him down and kill him in cold blood.
Following these painful murders, Black people took to the streets of America to say enough is enough. The Black Lives Matter movement was reignited, prompting demonstrators to protest for weeks against racism and police brutality in this country. They've also protested their way right down to the ballot box, making their voices heard in more ways than one.
No justice!
And that's something Ense mentioned to us before in episode one.
I think that there was definitely a time where you would hear, there were the camps, right? And the camps were very clearly defined. There were people who said, like, the only path towards liberation is protesting and direct action. And then there are people who would point at protesters and say, get out of the streets. You all need to be going to vote because that's how we're going to bring about change. And what the beauty of what we're seeing in this moment is that the young folks who are putting their bodies on the lines, Black people, the women, the femmes, the allies, the co-conspirators, that there is a growing understanding that it's not either or, that it's both and. And that's not a rhetorical device, right? Like, it's not a rhetorical thing. We are seeing people protesting all the way to the polls.
I think Thomas was a bit more cautious about how the energy of the protests would play out in the polls. But ultimately, he seemed optimistic.
Well, that happens sometimes. Sometimes the energy that you see on the streets as the election gets closer gets translated into an effort to get people registered so they can vote, and then on election day, getting them to the polls. And we could see that this time. And there was some of that, by the way, in 2018 around the midterms, where the Democrats made an enormous effort to boost turnout. And in fact, turnout was the highest in the midterm election than it had been in nearly a century. So there's a lot of energy there. You're quite right about that. It doesn't always translate, though. And an example of that, I think, is the 1968 election, where this was fought, that election was fought out against the backdrop of the Vietnam War protests, protests that were going on in the cities at the time. And the turnout in 1968 actually declined from what it was in 1964. And the same thing happened again, by the way, in 1972, even though the Vietnam War protests were still going on. Somehow that didn't translate into getting people to the polls. And in 1972, the turnout level dropped from 1968. So usually it does, but doesn't always. This time, it strikes me that it will, as long as there aren't barriers to voting that relate to COVID. And it's pretty unclear at this point how difficult it's going to be for some people to actually cast ballots in November. And it may be that turnout, if it's really difficult, we'll see a turnout decline relative to 2016. If the polls are pretty easy to get to, if it's fairly easy to cast your ballot, I would place my bet on the side of increased turnout this go around.
You know, as journalists, we always strive to get both sides of the story. And that's still the case with this podcast. We reached out to Republican lawmakers, state parties, and even right-leaning analysts.
Yeah, but not one member of the GOP spoke to us or tried to explain how the accusations of voter suppression thrown at the party are wrong. In fact, when we spoke to our guests, time and time again, they pointed at Republicans as the biggest perpetrators of voter suppression in this country.
So it is not your imagination. What is happening is real. You cannot fix what you have not faced. And we need to face the fact that we are watching them take a sledgehammer to our democratic institutions, to our elections infrastructure, and they're trying to steal the election in November.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of America the Voiceless. Tune in next week as we talk to historian Dr. Carol Anderson about the history of Black voter suppression. A special thank you to our podcast producer and engineer, Willis Polk, and the staff at the North Star.
This podcast is brought to you by The North Star, an independent media site fully supported by our members on thenorthstar.com. If you're not already a member, we'd love for you to subscribe so you can support our work. You can catch a fresh episode of America the Voiceless every Thursday on Spotify or Apple Music or wherever you listen to podcasts.